Welcome to the Solid Frame Saturdays podcast. I'm your host, Caroline Lee. Join me as I take a deep dive into the wonderful world of style frames and interview those who are industry wizards when it comes to this phase of the animated production process. For those who may not know, style frames are pieces of creative that are developed during the pre-production phase of an animation project, and they allow creators and clients alike get an idea of the overall style of a piece. Sometimes the initial vision is carried through to the end, and other times it ends up on the cutting room floor. During this podcast, we'll discuss projects of all shapes and sizes, and the challenges, rewards, and lessons learned while developing what I like to call each guest's favorite frame. So with that said, let's get started on episode 2. You may have heard today's guest on other podcasts, such as the School of Motion podcast, and you may have even seen his work on the big screen. He's worked on a multitude of projects over the course of his career, and he's created some awesome style frames in the process. He's a talented motion designer and a great person all around, and I'm so excited to have him on today. Please help me in welcoming James Ramirez to the show. Hey, James. Thank you so much for joining me on the show today. How's everything going?
Going awesome. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Of course. My pleasure. How's everything been? How's the beginning of the year treating you?
It's not bad. Kind of like started off the year, like I started a campaign that I was working on like at the end of the year. So just carrying into this year. So it kind of feels like there really wasn't much of a pause, but, I mean, it's fine. It's going good.
Did you enjoy the holidays? Did you at least get a couple of days to enjoy, you know, Christmas and New Year's, all that jazz?
Yeah. We disappeared for a little bit. We got like a couple of weeks off. So it was nice to kind of just like reset at the end of the year and just kind of do nothing for a little bit.
Very nice. And then jump right back in.
Yeah. And immediately jump right back in.
So were you like first Monday back, were you like already booked doing stuff?
Yeah. Basically it was like instant, hit the ground running. Like as like the first like New Year's week or whatever that was. Like
we were on to it.
So, yeah, no, it was crazy. Cause like my past year was, I was on a film project pretty much for all of last year. I mean, there was some like downtime where I would switch to other gigs in between, but it was mostly that. So to kind of like fully like wrap the year and end that and then kind of start with something new, it was, I mean, I guess it's kind of refreshing to just like be on a new slate, I guess, for the year. But it's fun. It's
nice. Well, it sounds like it's going well so far, which is great. And we're only in January, so we have the rest of the year to look forward to.
And January is almost over.
It's like the 20th. I can't believe it. I know. Yeah, we're already approaching the end of the month. This is wild.
I know.
It'll be springtime Q2 before we even realize it. Every year just goes by too fast. Every day, I personally feel like there's never enough time in the day. And then the year wraps up and you're just like, what did I do? We're back in January again.
It's so like crazy to me. Like, I feel like my work is usually like a big mixture of things. Like I kind of do like a lot of like broadcast stuff or film projects and, kind of like TV stuff. But like whenever I get I guess it's been a while since I've been on a film project like that that's taken up like an entire chunk of your time, but it's always so hard to kind of like look back and see, like to judge my time, I guess, is like, how did I spend it? How am I going to spend it this year? And so looking forward, I'm like, oh, what do I want to do this year? How do I want to judge projects or juggle projects? And then it's so like up in the air, you never know what's going to come at you. So it's always so hard to figure out what you want to do.
Yeah.
I want to try to do more time off this year, but I say that every year. So we'll see if I can do it.
That balance. Everyone's always looking for that balance.
It's hard.
And it's a good time capsule to look at the end of the year. Like, you know, hey, what did I do? And kind of reflect on it. I'm sure there are people who do that. And I haven't, I feel like you said, you know, I just kind of jump right back into stuff. I'm just like, and here we go, new year.
Well, yeah, that's actually something I did like in my little break that I had is, something that I try to be diligent about is like doing my own personal work. And so
you are very good at that.
Well, usually in the evenings, like I've kind of found out that, like, you know, like my wife goes to bed early. She goes to bed like at 10. And so like the evenings are like mine. It's just like the internet is like kind of quiet. No one's bugging you. And it's just like my time to kind of like be by myself. And so I mostly will just kind of play around on the computer and experiment and make stuff. But sometimes that's also gaming. I'll do gaming or right. whatever. But so at the end of the year, I kind of like tried to look back at all of my personal projects and put them into a reel, just kind of like, here's my sizzle of like personal projects. And it actually made me feel really good at for how busy I was during the year to have as much work as I did to like personal work.
And so
it's something that I try to do a lot, and it's like, I don't know, as a creative, I'm always going to be making stuff. So it feels good when you can kind of look back at it and it feels like stuff that you're proud of. So there was a lot of like personal work that I'm, you know, it's still like motivating me and keeping me like moving forward and experimenting. So
I really like that. I really like that idea of like creating like a personal reel to like kind of look back on and then, you know, see what you want to do for the following year.
Well, it's also like working on a film where I'm not going to be able to show any of that for who knows how long. Like, it's kind of like a personal way of like me saying like, okay, client wise, I'm not going to have anything to show for like my past year. Mm-hmm. So what else can I show so that I feel like I did something? And then it was like rewarding to see that I had enough personal work.
Yeah.
That it felt like I existed for a year versus like not existing.
I know. Right. Cause if it's not on Instagram, it doesn't exist. It's not real.
Well, it's like, it's tough because totally like you're always joking. Seeing people post stuff and they're like, you know, like people are like, oh, this is what I did. And I did this recently. And I did this. And you're like, yeah, I did a lot of things too, but they're all NDA and I cannot show any of it. So
I know
it's tough.
Yeah. But that's really cool. I like that idea a lot. You know, now you got me thinking like maybe I'll try something like that this year because personal work, you know, I try to do it on my downtime and downtime, you know, sometimes it's just limited because you're doing other things too, like personal and leisure, and it's a tough balance. Yeah. So I like this. Like this is kind of like a little motivational piece maybe that I need for this year. So who knows, maybe at the end of 2022, I'll have to like share a personal reel with you.
I love it. Well, it's one of those things too, where it's like, when I had posted that, I got like a lot of messages about it. And there was a lot of people who were asking me like, how do you find time for this? Or how, like, what is your like, you know, advice for doing something like this? And I said, you know, sometimes I didn't really know I was going to have something to share at the end of all this. I was just making it to make it. And sometimes that's just part of the process. Like sometimes you have to make like 20 things before you like one thing. And sometimes it's those little sketches and experiments that kind of pop up later for you as troubleshooting that you didn't really like plan for, but sometimes those things can come back and help you later. So sometimes it's, you don't have a lot to show for, but you did a lot of like experiments and studies. And so even just seeing those, even if they're failures too, it's like, that's like still part of your journey, you know, your process. So
absolutely.
I think all of that is helpful. And sometimes people get really hung up on like, if I spend like time on something, I need to show it, or it needs to be like something that's like final or done or perfect or something. And that's like, that'll stop you in your tracks like a lot.
For sure.
If you try to aim for that.
Definitely. Well, we've started talking a little bit about your personal work and alluding to client work. So for anyone who doesn't know you or isn't familiar with you, would you mind, you know, telling our audience a little bit about yourself, you know, like how you got into animation and motion design, the kind of work that you do? Are you freelance, staff, or you're based out of currently? You know, just a little bit about your journey so far.
Yeah, so I'm a creative based in LA. I've been out here for about 8 years. My path was a very unexpected path. No one in my family had ever done art. Grew up in a small town in Texas. I didn't really know anybody who did art. And so it was a very weird path to like end here, but I kind of had always been on computers when I was younger. And then I kind of, you know, ended up going to art school in Kansas City, Missouri, and not really knowing what the outcome of that would be. And I had a lot of support from my mom, who's like, yeah, just go for it. When like, wasn't really worried about like telling me that like, hey, that you're not going to get a job or there's not going to be money in that. But somehow like it basically took me going to school to kind of like realize that like there was like this idea of like making art and then being on the computer and that I could combine the two and that would just like turn into like the passion for what I wanted to do with my life. Once I realized that I could kind of like turn all this kind of, you know, computer interest into actually making things and finding out about kind of like motion and the motion world. Mm-hmm. Being in Kansas City, there's one design studio in Kansas City called MK12. And it turned out that some of them had gone through the same school as me. And so I got pushed to do an internship with them. This is like, you know, 2003, 2004. And that kind of like blew my mind and showed me kind of like the world of like, you know, motion graphics. And I knew immediately, like, this is kind of what I was going to gear myself towards. And so even though like at school, I was really kind of just like, I graduated from the Department of Photography and New Media. So it wasn't even really like I was like on a track to do exactly like, you know, now you can go to schools and like get a degree in motion graphics or right. whatever, motion design. And so now there's like tailored things for that where you're learning all the tools of the trade and everything. But this was kind of more like I was just learning the art side of things. And so working with them was really amazing opportunity that I kind of had no idea of how amazing it was going to be. But I spent 10 years with them kind of doing everything. They're kind of like an artist collective. There really wasn't like run like a proper shop or business or hierarchy. So oh, wow. It was fun because I got to do everything, like everything from like they had a huge green screen. So we would like constantly be shooting stuff. So I learned how to shoot on stage, like how to get, you know, source material, whether that was photography or video, to like bring into the computer and to make things, and the entire process from like design, pitching, presenting, make the production of it, and then kind of like finishing things and kind of like what all of that entailed. And so what was crazy is like, you know, the amount of knowledge that I was absorbing and learning from them, I didn't really fully understand until I moved away. And I moved out to LA, and I kind of was like freelancing with a couple of places. And then I ended up going staff at We Are Royale, and I was staff with them for 3 years as an art director. But going to there was kind of the first time I had this full realization of like all this knowledge I had gained that all of my peers didn't have. And so it was like, it became strengths for me to learn that I had like kind of like this knowledge of the different process, parts of the process, and how I could kind of apply myself differently to projects instead of just being like, I'm an animator, I only know how to do this thing, and I right. don't understand the rest of the process. And mm-hmm. so it was really cool to come out here to LA and then kind of like work alongside some really amazing artists, and the talent pool out here is obviously awesome. And so I went from kind of making a bunch of like stylized, like non-photorealistic kind of, you know, MoGraph type stuff to like working with Royale was more like high-end kind of CG. And although they did a lot of stylized stuff, but I was learning like some different chops. And so that was really great. And then I went freelance, and then I've kind of been mostly working with a studio called Alma Mater, who my friend Brian runs. It's like a really small, like 3-person shop, but it's been really great fit for me creatively because we trust each other and we work really well together. So like for the past, you know, I guess that was like 2017 that I started work with him. So it's oh, wow. already been like three or 4 years yeah. now. So it's been fun. We've done a lot of like amazing collaborations, and Brian's Moz is the creative director designer there, and he's been a great mentor to me to help me kind of like hone in the skills that, you know, I'm still trying to work on and figure out as I move on my path. But so yeah, all that journey kind of led me to where I am now. And so I kind of have gone from the title of like art director to somewhere, and I don't know what I'm trying to figure out. Like I kind of have just like been saying creative lately because it's easiest to kind of cover a lot of bases.
Sure.
But yeah, it's been fun. Like the past few years, you know, like I've worked on some really cool films and lots of like TV stuff and lots of things for streaming platforms and video games. I'm kind of like a generalist in my skill set, so it leads me to be able to be more flexible in the types of opportunities I take on. And I'm kind of constantly chasing things that kind of interest me. So I'm not very peculiar, like, oh, I only want to do this like subset of work. I'm kind of just interested in creative troubleshooting and challenges. So it's been an interesting ride. And so it's like led me to do things like that film project that I was on all last year, you know, was with Alma Mater, and, you know, Brian trusting me to kind of lead and be the, like, the creative on that all by myself to like do kind of like visual effects and stuff throughout the film. And so it's fun to figure out what my limits are, where I have room to grow, and like what I'm still trying to, figure out. So
that's an incredible undertaking as like a one person kind of thing.
Yeah, no, it's crazy because everyone kind of thinks of films as like this really huge productions and big studios and everything. And I mean, and that for the most part is the case, you know, there is a lot of that happens, you know, you do have the bigger studios to do things, but sometimes like, you know, I would call Alma Mater like a design boutique, like they're brought in to help because they have that design sensibility to help guide certain areas or things in the film. And so being trusted with that kind of vision to apply design kind of throughout the film to kind of create cohesion, and being able to kind of manifest that through a multitude of executions is kind of like a something that not a lot of people can do. But it's, again, it's kind of like interesting to kind of learn how all these different steps along my journey kind of have added up and helped me kind of have this like bigger bird's eye view on these kind of creative projects where I can apply myself in multiple ways.
It's
been fun. It's like a such a crazy journey, but it's, you know, it all these like odds and ends that I didn't really know where I was going. I really wasn't pointing myself in a direction. I was kind of letting the wind kind of take me. And sometimes that's very scary. But also it's led me to be in places where I didn't anticipate. So
for sure. It's got to feel, I'm assuming, freeing too, because, you know, it's great to have aspirations and, you know, going, saying to yourself, you know, I want to go down this track. But what if it doesn't work out? You know, will you be, you know, you set an expectation for yourself. So do you feel let down? Or are you okay with it? You know, like, I know everybody's different. So I would think that it's kind of freeing then to kind of say like, you know, well, wherever the wind takes me, like, you know, I'll go.
It's freeing and it's scary, you know, because you don't, you know, like I'm saying about this year, like I have absolutely no idea what this year is going to bring me.
Sure.
Like zero ideas. And I mean, there's ideas of like what I know are going to come to me by the studios that I talk to or places that I talk to. And so I know the types of opportunities that will come to me and I can kind of filter those out, but it's still kind of like, to some people that's like terrifying to not know, like, okay, for the next 6 months, I have like this lined up and then this lined up. Like I'm kind of like always going by the edge of my seat. So it is freeing, but sometimes it's terrifying.
For sure.
I don't know. It works for me. I like it.
keeps us on our toes, right?
Yeah.
Never a dull moment, never a dull day.
Yeah. And I guess it's like, you know, I guess maybe sometimes I am afraid if like I set my goal to something and I didn't hit it, then like that disappointment, you know, maybe would, you know, affect me a certain way. So I guess by not having like set ideal goals, then I'm just kind of avoiding that in my own way.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
no, it's good. I mean, it's good to have goals, but I think, you know, at the same time, kind of like going with the flow of things is also really great too. But yes, also terrifying at the same time. So there's no perfect scenario ever. So
yeah,
if you can roll with the punches, you know, I think it's, you know, serves you better in the long run.
Yeah. And I guess I've figured that out over the years too, is that there really is no kind of like three-step program for everybody.
Yeah.
Like what you kind of realize is you could hear somebody say like, oh, I did this and then this and this, and that's what works. And that's where it got me where I am. And that isn't going to work for everybody. And so what you have to do is adapt and figure out, like, you can try to retrace those steps, but it really isn't a 1-2-3 for anybody. And so there are certain, like, if you're trying to get into a certain career, like, oh, I want to be a matte painter at ILM. Like, obviously there are steps you could take that would get you there. And that's a focused route. But I find that a lot of the journey is just going to teach you about things that you do and don't like about what you do. And so sometimes you kind of have to go down those wrong roads. And sometimes it's like that kind of, you know, free spirit in the wind part of it is me also like being open to a lot of various ideas rather than just being so like tunnel visioned on what I think is, you know, like my best use. Like I've been put into positions that I didn't think that I was ready for, that other people thought I was ready for, or that other people saw that I was good for. So by being a little bit more open and kind of like letting the process shape me, like those are the types of things that I think, you know, sometimes younger people who are getting into it kind of always like want to listen to somebody and say like, oh, it's like these, you know, three things are the key to success. And yep. It's like, that's not really how it works.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody's different. Everybody's path is different. Everybody's journey is different. Like you were saying, well, what works for one person might not work for somebody else. So you're so true when you say that.
Totally.
Well, you alluded to some film work. So I'd love to jump into your favorite frame, the main event of the show, that you're going to be sharing with us today. So, you know, we can start to pull up the frames, and the concept frames that you, tossed in with it. So yeah, if you could tell us a little bit about the piece that you've selected, that'd be awesome. And in that, you know, talk about like what the creative brief was like, you know, what some of the challenges and rewards were while you were on the job. You know, any project constraints that you had to deal with while working on it. Yeah, so feel free to jump right into it.
Yeah, so the frame I chose is from the animated film Into the Spider-Verse. It's one of my favorite projects that I've gotten to work on. The frames I chose are from our initial concept pitch treatment. And I wanted to kind of share this because it's kind of like, again, like this kind of culmination of all of these different things that I've had along my path, where it's the first time where I presented an idea that I felt was entirely mine. Like it had like my fingerprint on it. And I feel like that is such a hard thing for an artist to do, is to kind of feel like they have like a voice in their work. And so much of my work throughout my career up until that point was, it kind of always felt like, even though I was making design frames and I was making or putting out concepts, it always kind of felt like it was being funneled through somebody else's voice. And that's kind of like one of my biggest like critiques I have of a lot of my work is like, say like, you know, my time at Royale, like 3 years of my time there, I feel like you could remove me from any project that I was on and you wouldn't really know that I was on it. And it's not necessarily a bad thing about me or them. Mm-hmm. It's more about how their design process works, where the creative director there, Brian Holman, is kind of funneling a vision through the studio of execution. So everyone's kind of working towards the goal of making kind of the studio's voice, which kind of ends up being kind of his voice. And so when I say that, like, you could remove me from a project and you wouldn't know I was there, it's not necessarily that I wasn't contributing behind the scenes or helping in a lot of different ways. It's just that I didn't really feel like I had a voice there. Like, I felt like I was just kind of, I was learning a lot and I was contributing, but it just didn't feel like I was unique there. So coming out of that and then landing on this film project, you know, I did this with Brian Ma at Alma Mater, and you know, again, in hindsight, someone giving me trust that, you know, I didn't know that I could achieve the things that I output was like, you know, at the end of the project, Brian gave me co-director credit for the main on ends of the title sequence that we did.
Wow.
And that's not something that I had envisioned my role as or thought I was doing, but that's just kind of like how we came out at the other end of it. And so he asked me to pitch on the film with him. And it was interesting because it's a very, you know, kind of stylized look. And Brian's work mostly is kind of like high-end CG / visual effects, where he's like intermixing, you know, he directs a lot of live action. So it's kind of like intermixing graphics into spots or kind of very like polished photorealistic stuff. And so there isn't a lot of stylized work in his past. And so it was interesting to see him kind of approach the subject matter and then letting me kind of just approach it however I wanted. And, you know, like I worked hard on these frames. Like, this was, it's really daunting to work on a big project, right? Where it's like, this is a big title sequence. This film is obviously going to be amazing. They're pushing boundaries. How do you contribute something to this that's kind of like feels like this really big thing? And I feel like I spent almost an entire month working on these frames.
Wow.
Just kind of like, you know, noodling and trying to figure out things. And so it was like this process of like kind of distilling down the creative brief and trying to output something that felt in line not only with what they're asking of you, but also, again, back to like something that I felt like was uniquely like my take on it. And so that's kind of like what is really hard to get to as a designer, I feel like, is there is this kind of like separation of I feel like as a designer, there's a lot of times where you're just, there's, what am I trying to say? There's like a technical side of, or a technical side and a craft side to what you're doing.
For sure.
And then there's like a conceptual and theoretical side to what you're doing. So
yeah,
there's this approach of like the client's brief, like in this case is, we want to deconstruct a comic book. Like that's the brief of the film, but also kind of a job that they wanted the title sequence to kind of help lift. And so with that of a brief, it's wide open and you're begin to try to figure out how do you instill that philosophy into the design frames. Like, what are you building to the design frames that feels like it's listening to that and exploring it in a way that doesn't feel too either kitsch or, right, you know, generic or, yep, something that's been done before, because, you know, we obviously always want to try to do our own unique visual, something that hasn't been done before, even though that's like really, really hard to do. But that's the two reasons why I selected these frames, because I feel like A, it was the first time that it felt truly like I walked away and I was like, those frames are mine, like through and through. Like, it feels like that's my voice. It feels like it's a cool style. It feels like everything that I've been working on and learning over the years, kind of like in a set of frames. And then on the other hand, it also is like, I feel like me being able to be in tune with what the directors were asking of us, which again is like that kind of problem solving of the brief and figuring out what that looks like. And those two things, I feel like, kind of like our career highlights for me, of like kind of reaching a point. It was kind of like reaching like the next step for me. It was like kind of getting to my next step of learning and getting to my next step of like what I'm going to, how I'm going to present myself, and also how I'm going to like approach my work. And so, yeah, so it's like a lot to say, but like that's kind of like why these frames, I kind of hold these frames like in high regards and in the body of my work, but then also just like as something that I'm really proud of.
They're iconic though too at the same time. I mean, it was a fantastic film, and the fact that you got to contribute to it is like, it's got to feel amazing to be like, yeah, you know, I see like my style in this, like, you know, sequence, and I contributed to that. That's got to be like kind of like out of body in a way.
Yeah, no, it's hard because, like, you know, in the midst of it, you know, like we're seeing, like, as the process of this film is happening, right, is like, you're seeing the film develop, you're seeing what they're working on, you're seeing rough cuts, you're seeing their process, and it kind of freaks you out that you have to follow it. Like, right, you're doing a main on ends. And so it's at the end of the film, the audience has just been taking on this like amazing journey and you have to follow it. And yeah, like you kind of have to like not get scared by that and not think about it. And so it's daunting in that sense, but it's also a fun challenge. You know, it's like fun trying to figure out like what can I do, that how do you contribute?
For sure. Well, I watched it right before the holidays for the first time. I hadn't seen it for the first time in a long, yeah. So I'm a late bloomer to Spider-Verse, but it was an amazing film. And then, yeah, I stayed through to the end and I was just like, there it is. Like, there's James, yeah, right in there.
Yeah, it was, I mean, it was fun. It's like there was like a lot of like big challenges to it, obviously, as you kind of like move through it of what is happening. And I feel like I was fortunate enough to kind of like be able to have a great team. Like I said, it was like me and Brian who were like co-directing it. But you know, back to this kind of like lineage of my journey is like I also got to bring on Renzo Reyes to help compositing,
Very
and I
cool.
worked with him at Royale. And so through my journey of like being in the wind, I landed there, met him, learned so much from him compositing, and was able to like he just happened to like go freelance like right when this project was like kind of happened, and so it kind of like all timed out to work out. But you know, so like we kind of were able to like have people that it was like a trust system, like the directors of the film trusted us, and or you know, trust alma mater and Brian, who trusted me, who and I trusted the team. And so it was like all this like trust going through of like what we were making and how we were trying to push the bounds of the title sequence around, and of course within like the means of trying to execute it within the time frame and you know the specs of delivery and all of that. And so it's like it was a fun equation to kind of like troubleshoot and figure out, but very challenging, very stressful. And you just want to teleport to the other side where you're like, I just want to teleport to when I'm done and this is all great and you can look back at it and celebrate it. But that journey was like a really hard fought one, but I was like willing to do it because I knew what the project meant to me and what being able to work on a film like this meant. Like it, you know, it was like it had diversity. It was like celebrating like this kid Miles who's like into graffiti art, and I love graffiti, and I used to do graffiti, and it was like all these like different things and qualities of the film that I felt were powerful and representational, and I wanted to do my best to like for all of those reasons that I knew the film was going to be good, not just from like a visual sake, but just from like story
Yeah.
standpoint and everything. Like I wanted to contribute it, and I wanted my contribution to be meaningful, and so that's like, you know, that's a lot to take on as an artist to like, you know, you not only you're trying to do your best work, but you want to make sure that everyone is on board with it and it feels like you're doing justice to it. So yeah, it's a very it's a hard thing, but it was fun.
No, and it came out great. And everything that you just said, you can visually see it in the frames too. And you can see it in the sequence too. If anyone
Yeah.
hasn't seen Spider-Verse, don't be like me and wait millions of years to go watch it. Watch it. It's an incredible film. And now there's a second one coming out. So hopefully you
Yeah.
guys will get to do the sequence again on that one too.
And it's a two-part
And
too,
it's a
which is
two-part.
crazy.
That's right. So
Yeah.
no, seriously, if you haven't seen it, go check it out and then see the main on end because it is really remarkable. And you guys did an awesome job with it.
Oh,
But
awesome.
yes, walk me through which I'm trying to see here, the which
Yeah.
frame is it that like is the one that like we're focusing on today for you? Is it
Which
the
one is it?
presentation?
I'm trying to look through. So in the concept of one folder,
Okay.
I don't think I put a. Did I send you a
I think it
full
was.
like grid of them? I don't think I sent you a full grid of them.
I
Well,
don't believe
there's, I
so.
mean, so I guess like the frame, there's the frame 05.
Yeah, that was the first one that you had sent.
Okay, yeah, so we can talk about this
So
one.
we'll make that the focus.
So I think this kind of does, you know, working on these frames, there was a lot to figure out. So kind of starting at like ground zero to talk about these is like, you know, we get the script of the film. We read the script through, and you're kind of understanding the story, and then you see a really rough cut. And the rough cut is like, you know, lots of previs, lots of thumbnail sketches, roughed out areas. There's parts like, you know, it's funny is like whenever you see like your first rough edit, like where the trailer happens, like you can see those moments in the film where it's like, oh, this was a trailer shot, so it's much more refined or closer to finish. And then it'll kind of go back to like, you know, rough stuff. And so you're kind of seeing that and you get a general gist of the film, right? You're like, okay, there's this is, we're being introduced to the multiverse. There's multiple characters. We're following Miles. And, you know, there's, you're kind of following the story about how they all share kind of the same roots, but their life journey is kind of very different or slightly different. And then they're kind of brought together to problem solve and then fix things. And so what my initial takeaway was to kind of was like, one is to like research Miles. I researched Miles and kind of looked at, because he had a comic, you know, background. So there was like a lot of comics exploring, like his, the whole like Spider-Verse had been explored in comics and kind of Miles and some of these other characters. And so that was like my first homework, was to kind of dive into that and figure that out. And then secondly, it was like kind of beginning to explore visually how I wanted to kind of like deduce the themes from the film into, I guess, aesthetically, like how that's represented on frame.
Right.
And so like talking with Brian a lot, we kind of decided that there was these moments as we kind of watched the rough cut, there was these moments that were called burst cards, that their internal kind of like Sony's internal naming of these were burst cards. There were these moments in the film where it would kind of pop to a very graphic illustration for a few frames. Some of them were like 2 frames, some of them were like 4 frames, but they were like very short, kind of like just intermittent segments that were entered into the film. And so looking at the burst cards, what we decided was that there was a very like kind of like strong visual thing that was happening there that we kind of wanted to kind of echo and explore. And that was like a reduced color palette. So taking the characters and kind of like reducing them into like much more minimal tones, values, and then exploring the kind of comic printing process. So if you're going to like think of a deconstructed comic book, what are the elements of that? And, you know, it's kind of like the color separation, the Binde dots, the, you know, the textural patterns that come from that, and how those like are kind of actually layered and interact in, let's say, like a analog methodology, and how do you kind of explore that in design. So that was like a big thing that we talked about and we're working on. And then obviously splatters and paint were very important to Miles' character. So right. I wanted to make that a big element. And so this frame that I picked, I feel explores a lot of that. And then it also looks at onomatopoeias. And so like how the importance of typography could play within the frames. And so, you know, this is like me hand drawing some type and kind of placing it into the scene and trying to figure out how to work. And then overall, the overall concept was called reflection. So what I decided was the idea of reflection was really important in that all of these characters were walking in each other's shoes. So how could you represent that they were kind of like the same but different? And I thought of that through that each of them have a unique, like if you're looking at these as characters, like they're all Spider-Man or, and they all swing, but they all swing differently. Like, you know, Miles has a bit more of like attitude, or like Gwen is more graceful and aerobatic, and you know, Noir is like, I don't know, more whatever, old school, and you know, Spider-Ham's very cartoony. So they all move differently. And so even though you're seeing the same action, that you would see that same action, but it was slightly different. And so the idea of like the multiverse to me was like, let's represent that through reflection. Perfect. And so if you want to look at in the very like top folder, there's I have a Miles reference. And so this Miles reference was, again, like, if I'm going to look back at just comics, it was really cool because at the time, Marvel had introduced that you could sign up for their iPad subscription and you could access all of, like, the backlog of comics for, like, $10 a month or something. So this was an amazing resource for me to be able to, like, look back at what is happening in kind of like not only just Spider-Man's world, but also in Miles' world. So looking at all of that stuff for reference, following the story, following, like, you know, what are the tropes that happen in the comics? Because obviously, like, this is a art form that artists have been exploring for a long time period now. So there's a lot of things that they've already, you know, everyone who's approaching it is trying to figure out new visual things to play with and how the user navigates the story. And what's like really interesting about comics is they kind of approach things in a non-linear format, in that you as a reader could look at different moments in time and follow it how you want. So you could look at the last panel and then go back to the first panel, or you could follow it progressively or whatever, but there's this interesting quality that happens to it that I started to gravitate towards. And then, so you can see like a good representation. This is like maybe like the very like top left frame. There's a Peter Parker who's jumping and he's in a black suit. And what you see in the frame is like a representation of the full jump, but at different moments. So you see him kind of echoed essentially. And so what I started like realizing was that there was this kind of like manipulation of time that was happening in the comics that would be interesting to gravitate towards. But then also like looking at Miles' comic, there was a lot of the quality of the textural quality that his comic had that was like different, stand out from the rest. So again, looking like zooming into a lot of stuff, I would see like textural, like grittiness and kind of splatters and that kind of material tactility that I thought was important to his character that I wanted to bring to the designs. And then secondly, you know, what I'm also looking at is like when you're trying to make design frames, like kind of like in a small compressed time, I'm not a character artist, neither is Brian. We're not here to draw Spider-Man. And again, back to like, he's such an iconic thing that he has very specific poses. Like if you draw him, someone could be like, oh, that's not how Spider-Man jumps, or that's not how Miles like swings. And so there's a lot there to like just his personality that is in the frames that amazing illustrators have done. So it's like basically kind of also looking at all of this just for like things as source material to kind of like cut out and work over and draw over and manipulate to like make frames. And so there was, you know, looking at all this reference, it was like, that was kind of like something I was taking in. And then it was also taken in again, like the typography was very important. So looking at onomatopoeias, looking at how they were used in frames to accentuate action, looking at speed lines, anything typography related that we could like, you know, bring back into our sequence.
Right.
And then the Spider-Verse presentation concept 01 is kind of how I presented my reference in context of my concept. So after, you know, I finish my design frames, I'm putting it into a deck. Like this is the frame that I decided to kind of like put before my treatment to walk through the idea of like reflection. And so I'm walking through, like there's two things to take away that I'm trying to kind of instill are representing multiple characters through similar movements and echoes, this idea of like echoing. So you're basically playing with time, like in 4D. So you're kind of seeing time stretched and visualized through echoes. And then this idea of a physical representation of reflection. So the idea that these characters, you could like, you know, twist your camera or move your camera in certain ways. And these characters are existing in the same place, but in different worlds. So kind of exploring the multiverse.
Very cool.
And so that's, you know, this is kind of like how I summarize that. And then you're basically prefacing the overall concept, and then you're jumping into the actual design frames. And so yeah, that's that from like a top point of view is kind of like my idea, how I approached it, and then the kind of references and stuff that I was pulling.
You talked a lot about the typography too, which I think is like really interesting, because you said that, you know, in the reference, the Miles reference, you know, you're trying to pull like, you know, the typography elements and the textures and the grittiness from that as well. But you also infused a lot of graffiti style that you had said earlier that, you know, you really enjoyed doing. a while back and everything. So I thought that that was also really interesting too, that when you see that kind of infused in the frames that you put together as well, that like, if you know, it was in New York City, like, you know, New York City or whatever. So I thought that that was really cool too, that like you kind of even made the type your own. Like it still looks very comic book like based on what they were saying with the brief, but the graffiti element I think really just like kind of takes it over the top.
Yeah. That's something that, you know, like I think if we look at the frames that I did in the first frame, you know, like I did a tag that's behind him that, you know, again, is like something that he's like very obscured and you're not really paying attention to it, but it's more about like place and purpose. And so it's like right. Putting purposeful things in there. And so it's like, yeah, being able to kind of like do something like that and be like, I'm going to put these letters in there and be able to make that myself was like important. And then also like, you know, trying to play with splatters, overspray and drips. I had created a library of Photoshop brushes from, I basically kind of like took black spray paint and spray painted on a bunch of different white paper to get like, let's say like 20 different splatters, sprays, drips, and dots or what have you, scanned all that in, built in a library of textures so that not only are you trying to like make something feel like grittiness and spray paint, but also like using an actual texture source that is, you know, true to the nature of what it would do. Right. And so then, yeah, you look at like the second frame where it's Miles close up and it's like, yeah, just kind of exploring like, what does that look like? And how can you like play with that? Like in this style and kind of like creating these cool moments of like very much attaching this like graffiti idea to him and like his character and his world. And so that's what I kind of wanted to explore.
It looks so good. I love these frames so much. Like everything that you've been talking about, you can just like clearly see right in these frames. And then, you know, yeah, again, if you've seen the sequence itself, you know, obviously you see it in motion. Like it's just so well done. You guys did such an awesome job with this. And I'm so happy you chose these frames to kind of like get some insight into what it took to kind of get to this style and this execution and making it happen.
Yeah.
I think you had briefly said that the time constraint, it was a quick turnaround.
Well, so that's what's kind of interesting is like, you know, when we got the brief to pitch, there was a little bit of time, but it wasn't like a paid pitch. So we were on other projects and I would basically try to like get through enough of my other projects to like spend time on this.
Right.
And so I knew that I wanted to do this. So it was more about like trying to like, basically like, it's like when your mom says you can play games after you finish all your chores, it's like, you're trying to bust through all your chores to get to like the good stuff. And so we did that and because they kind of like reached out to us a little bit early, there was time in the initial design phase to kind of explore and tinker around with ideas. And so we were able to do that. Brian presented two concepts and then I presented this treatment. So we had three concepts overall. And then we took a meeting with them, which was also like crazy to walk into a pitch meeting in person and you walk into a room and you're just kind of like, what's crazy is like, for those who don't know, the film had three directors and then the two executive producers, Phil Lord and Chris Miller, who kind of like are directors in their own right. So they kind of have like this really kind of big presence and thumbprint on the film. And then Phil also like co-wrote the script as well. So like they're like very entrenched in the process. So you're walking into a meeting with like five people who are very invested in this film. They've been working on this film for much longer than us, like, you know, 2-3 years. And you're presenting them ideas and designs and trying to walk them through it. And it's crazy because like they're being impressed by your work, but you're like, shut up. Like you're making that thing. Like that thing is amazing. This is like nothing. But it's fun when artists can kind of truly respect each other's point of views. And so what they were appreciating about us was that our point of view was fresh and different from theirs, you know, like they, because they've been sitting with it so long, you know, my professor in college used to call it the outhouse effect. When you've been in your shit so long, you can no longer smell it. And so it's like this idea of like being able to like remove yourself from things for a while and kind of get this fresh eyes. And so even though, you know, I'm looking at it like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm going to this meeting presenting these ideas. They were just like so excited to have fresh eyes from outside. And Brian in the past had worked with Phil and Chris before on, they did like the Lego movies and the Jump Street movies and some other stuff before. So they had a working relationship. So Phil and Chris trusted Brian like inherently, like we love your work. They love working with him. So I'm basically kind of like standing next to him as like a nobody and presenting with him, but, you know, walking them through these ideas. And so that was really cool and refreshing. And it was a great takeaway. They loved everything. And kind of totally did the client thing of like, we love all three ideas. Can you combine them all? And so we, you know, went away and got feedback on everything, spent some downtime working on things, did a revised. I think I have it here. I have a motion test that I then kind of worked on. And then, so if we look at that, what's in the motion test process? So if you look at O2, I think is the kind of like final one that I actually, that is a lie. Let me see here. What did I give you?
I think
Okay. So in the concept O1 folder, there's a concept O1 motion test that that's kind of like the final that we presented. So basically they see the treatment and they're like, okay, great. But what does this look like in motion?
Right.
And
right.
Of course we're like, don't know. Like we have to figure it out. And so, Brian kind of passed that to me and was like, all right, here, well, you figure out what it looks like in motion. And so this motion test is kind of like the first time we see anything moving and we're trying to figure stuff out. So I've basically taken a design frame kind of like into After Effects and 3D and started to try to figure out, you know, what does this look like? And so the main things that I'm trying to troubleshoot with this, but also prove to them, is that like, if you're going to do something halftones, it gets really tricky really fast because basically the idea of patterns flatten things out.
Right.
You want everything to have depth. And so if everything has a halftone pattern in it, how can you successfully have things that feel like they're spatially representative without just making everything feel compressed again? And so that's like the first step. And then the second is we got told that the film was finishing in stereo. So I've never done a stereo sequence before. So then I also have to figure out like, okay, if we do anything texturally, usually in my approach, which is what this kind of test is you can hack your way in After Effects to make all textures work. Oh, I can put some cards on in 3D and 2.5D space and move around it and you'll get textures and all these kinds. So I'm doing all these things. And then they're like, well, that's not really going to work in stereo. Like everything needs to work in stereo. So then it becomes like this greater like challenge of like, okay, now we need to figure out how to do this like in a different capacity.
Yeah. Yeah.
But this motion test is kind of like the first step of like, what does this look like? How does it move? What is stylistically, what are we trying to approach and translate, trying to kind of extrapolate from the design frames into a process that could be pushed into production. So that's what we do. And so then they're like, okay, cool. That looks nice. But we sit for a time period and then we kind of come back. I think we sit for like maybe like a couple of months while they're working on the film. And then we kind of, so basically the time period of like the actual title sequences, let's say is like August is me starting to look at production. How would we move into production with this? And then Brian is helping figure out narratively, like, okay, we have a style of the sequence, but how do you narratively apply that over the entire duration to kind of figure out like what we're following, who we're following. And then stylistically, there were some changes too. So at this point, I think they had past us, they were like, okay, look, like we're looking at things and the film's progressing and we're kind of understanding stuff. But what we decide is that we really want to lean into like the burst frames. We know you guys were using that as inspiration, but like what they loved about the burst frames in the film was that it was to them through their, again, this like whole point of view thing was that to them, that was something stylistically that they couldn't explore for the entire film.
Right.
They loved what it was doing, but it was such short moments. They wanted to see like, okay, if you could explore that as a moving sequence, like, can we be more in that vein for the entire sequence? And so, working with Brian, we kind of like then revised all the design frames to kind of follow this new kind of design ethos that was like very taking their kind of burst cards and re-envisioning them through kind of like our style, but then also executing it in a way that would work for the sequence.
Very cool.
And so basically like August, we're doing that. And then we kind of finally have sign off on look. And then September, October, November is production.
Yeah.
We wrap in November.
Wow.
So it was supposed to wrap in like October.
Yeah.
Like 20. So we basically kind of would have like 2 months to actually make it. And then it kind of just ended up pushing into like November, which was crazy because like with how films are distributed these days, basically like when they send it off to go worldwide or distributed or whatever, now like it's a upload right. to a server. So you can, since it's not getting printed to film, there's this like now like, okay, we can deliver like the day before
right,
goes live. And so
that's so true.
We actually worked on the sequence and delivered a version that in China was the first release. And so we actually shipped a version that went to China and then kept working on the sequence for another 2 weeks before the US domestic release. And then we shipped another version that then hit that. So it was a crazy, crazy ride. But yeah, it was like an interesting process because like as they're developing the film, they're starting to know more and more right. like what the film is either asking of the audience or kind of the ride that you're emotionally going on. And so when we're at the beginning of the project, asking them how they want to end their film, they don't really know yet because like the third act isn't even finished yet. But then by the time we're getting ready to actually work on the sequence, they've figured out, here's how the third act is. Here's like the color palette that we're exploring. Here's how crazy the third act is. So like what was interesting is they had us like, they wanted the end sequence to be outrageous. It was kind of like Phil's descriptive word that he gave us at one point was like, just make it outrageous. And so it was kind of exploring the multiverse and kind of like in its absurdity. And then as they kind of were getting nearer and nearer to finishing the film, it, like, as you remember, the third act is like crazy. It's like the collider fight. There's all kinds of stuff happening. The colors are crazy. There's like halftone balls everywhere and like it's madness. And so then they were like, okay, like we actually need to tone down the end sequence a little bit because yeah. the audience has just been given this crazy visual ride. So we actually kind of need like to de-escalate it. So
that's interesting.
Yeah. So it's interesting as you're kind of working on ideas, you're not only are you just trying to like make your sequence, but you're also kind of responding like there's like an ebb and flow with the actual film production too. So like the film is developing, they're figuring stuff out. And then we kind of like eventually land at a place where everyone's happy and feels like that the sequence is successful and what it's achieving. And then it's just kind of like trying to, you know, work on it up until the last second.
I feel like I could talk about this film like all day. Like there's just so much I'm learning about it. This has been awesome. Oh my gosh. We're actually running out of time, which I wish that wasn't happening because I would love to continue talking about like, you know, all this like film stuff that we're like starting to get into too. We do unfortunately have to start wrapping things up, but this has been so cool. I like all the insight that you've shared on this sequence and your favorite frame and everything. I mean, it's going to be such a cool behind the scenes for anyone who's ever seen it, who's interested in seeing them film and seeing the sequence. I think they're really going to enjoy it, hearing, you know, what you were able to contribute to it and everything, and working with Brian at Alma Mater. You guys created a beautiful main on end. So, you know, hopefully they hit you up for the next one too.
No, I mean, it's like, I really, you know, I mean, even though I've like talked about sequence before in other places, like I've really never have been able to kind of dive into like this pitch concept and why it was important to like how I presented it and the ideas that were there and the ideas that carried through all the way to the final. So, thanks for letting me kind of like explore this, you know, the style frame and what it took to make it. And so, yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. If people want to, you know, connect with you or follow more of your work, you know, where can people find you nowadays?
I'm easy. I'm Fried Pixels across everything. So Twitter, Instagram, my website. I'm very active on Instagram. Twitter is Random Musings, but yeah, that's where I'm at.
Awesome. Well, thank you again, James. You know, it's been a pleasure speaking with you today and getting a glimpse into your creative world, especially with Into the Spider-Verse. You know, we'll share some links on today's show notes down below for everyone that was mentioned here so that everyone, the audience, can check it out. And yeah, that wraps it up for today, everyone. Feel free to email us at styleframesatpod@gmail.com. We'll drop a little blurb at the bottom so that you can get that visually without just hearing it. And yeah, we'd love to hear what you think of the show. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, also come connect with us on social. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and LinkedIn. And thank you again for tuning in, and we'll see you guys in the next one.